Hi, welcome to today's episode of The A Word, presented by me, Kentaro Oe, Director of Design at AdSapiens. This season, we're talking to our guests about attention, AI, and ad tech, exploring the burning questions, future trends, and challenges surrounding all things creative and advertising. I'm joined today by Corby Fine. Corby is the Vice President of Digital Marketing and Performance at IGM Financial. Corby is also a certified leadership coach and works with individuals across different industries to build successful leaders. Corby, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me and thanks for the intro.
Yeah, of course. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a bright day, lots of opportunity for all of us. So ready to kick it off with you.
It's a new week. Let's get it. I just wanted to first ask you, can you give us a background of some of the projects you're working on at IGM? Maybe something you're working on latest that's really exciting you. Can you give us a rundown of what that looks like?
Yeah. One of the challenges we've had for the last while is really, we spend so much time and focus on digital marketing, on optimizing, lead conversion, on targeting the right audiences. And one of the things we often forget is, how do you really understand the value of that to the overall business? It's one thing to look for digital KPIs and conversions and clicks and cost, but are you driving real client acquisition? Are you increasing the value of your book? We're a wealth management firm. And so at the end of the day, the more assets that our customers actually continue to apply and put into their accounts, it's good for them in the long run. They earn more, we earn more. And so the stitching together and the attribution on a sort of end-to-end reporting is definitely one of the areas. And so that's a heavy lift between, your MarTech team all the way through to the sort of data science team, trying to really stitch all of these disparate systems together. That's probably where we're spending the most time right now.
Gotcha. Interesting. And I like how you touched on, it's got to be a team effort, right? There's so many different functions that kind of have to work together to get on board. So I guess, from you leading the marketing side, you understand the need for it. You understand like the bigger picture of it. Is there ever moments where you kind of have to like sell it to other departments? Or like, how does it work to get everyone to cooperate? Like, what does that look like in your role?
Yeah, all the time. I think that in organizations that are typically sales driven, meaning the sales teams are, we own the relationship, we own the lead gen, convincing them of marketing's value contribution to the overall ecosystem is really, really important. And one of the things that we've done to start that is when briefs and requests come in for anything as minute as, a white paper on one of our products, all the way through to helping launch a massive webinar or live event where we pull together prospects, clients, and our financial advisors, we force the definition of KPIs. And not just KPIs from the marketing perspective, but as I said before, KPIs from the business perspective, so that everybody understands that we're in this together and trying to essentially put the two pieces of the campaign all in one flow. So sales understands the marketing levers, marketing understands the sales levers, and together we're signing off on a commitment that we're both going to help each other with.
Mm. I like that word commitment. I think that's a nice way of, I think it's, you do have to tie in a lot of times. All these KPIs do seem very arbitrary, right? It's loosely tied to, the overall business goal, but like, has anyone really thought about that? I'm not sure.
Well, and I'd go even further to sort of say, sometimes there really aren't even any business driver KPIs for the marketing team. And so I think it's up to a marketing organization and a digital marketing organization to actually hold themselves to account, to force their partners, whether it's sales, executives, like whatever team it is, product, to actually put them down. And so sometimes it's as simple as asking, but if you want to make it permanent, change the brief, like force the elements of data that you as a marketing team want to be accountable for by changing the brief and then forcing those that are requesting, I use the word force, but in a nice way, those teams to think about it. And it's okay if one says, I thought about it and this is just a peer marketing, top of funnel brand awareness kind of a campaign. Great. But at least you had the conversation and you've consistently and consciously together made that decision.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It is all about collaboration and, really getting the buy-in there. And in terms of, I guess successful or unsuccessful marketing campaigns, can you just talk to us about, as you have interlaced how important, these marketing campaigns are to the rest of the business, what do you have any examples of, where you've seen a success of a campaign really impact the business overall? Like, how does that, what are some of those examples that you've kind of lived through?
Yeah, I think, successful campaigns are a result of a whole bunch of things. You know, one, a good understanding and objectives. Two, the tactics that are aligned to it. So if it's media planning, if it's audience targeting and segmentation, if it's the creative, the message, the offer, all of those things play a part. I know you've got a creative background. As more of an operational tactician person, I generally say, creative is very subjective, but at the end of the day, if the campaign hit its targets, creative was part of the reason. If the campaign didn't hit its targets, creative was part of the reason. And so the moral of that story is there's never one thing, unless it's like free beer, free cash. I mean, I can get you as many clicks as you want, but yeah. Beyond the sort of gaming it, all the components come together. So I think successful campaigns have really good understanding that no one asset or no one element of the campaign is going to be individually successful. That's the first thing. Two, they've got generally achievable, or at least, as I said, measurable targets and KPIs. So everybody knows what they're really striving for. Mm-hmm. And three, I think the most important one is the willingness to understand that even if it doesn't necessarily hit all of the expected outcomes, the learnings and the insights that come from the failure or from the lack of hitting the true target are actually seen just as valuable as the actual targets themselves. And so that's the sticky one that, and I'll give you a real example. We're doing lead generation right now. And as an organization, there's sort of multiple layers of lead generation. One could say just getting a list of emails. Two is quality, meaning those that we can connect with and are real humans that are willing to set up a meeting with one of our advisors. And then three would be they actually open an account, but four is profitability. And so if you ask, the finance team, they're going to say, well, I don't really care about crappy clients. I simply want profitable clients. If you ask the sales team, they're going to say, well, I just need volume because I know how to close. Right. And if you ask the marketing team, they're going to say, well, just give me the biggest list of emails you can, because that proves we did our job.
Yeah.
And so they're all right, but they need to work together to come up with a cohesive outcome that everybody's happy with. And that the things that didn't drive the best of those three outcomes, we're learning what it was and then adjusting in the future.
I love that. It is important the exact same way of like how all these departments are responding to the same thing with different questions. I think that's key, right? Of just like they're focusing on what they need to do, and someone kind of needs to manage like these individual pieces and make a tick.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking a lot about lead gen, but further down the purchase funnel, I suppose. I'm curious, which is also very important in ad tech as well, but one of the biggest things, at least in the last couple of years, in terms of metrics that, agencies, clients are talking about is attention, and really capturing attention, holding on to attention. That's the commodity that everyone's talking on for now. So I'm curious for I guess like the upper funnel piece of just, grabbing attention, bringing awareness, building that type of brand affinity. How, can you speak to how have any of your projects or campaigns kind of focused around that piece, and how has that looked like at IGM?
Yeah, we do a lot of that. In fact, I would say the majority of our campaigns historically have been more top to mid funnel. And there's two reasons for that. We've got two core brands. One, McKenzie, which is a manufacturer of financial products, so mutual funds, ETFs, alternatives. So the kind of stuff that you, through your advisor, would put in your portfolio and use for long-term investments and retirement one day. Mm-hmm. The other side of our business is our own wealth managers, those that are actually going out and getting people like you and me to give them our retirement savings, our investments, our accounts, and helping us manage money. So one is sort of a B2B, getting financial advisors to be convinced to put our stuff in the portfolios. The other one is we'll help manage your money for you. The McKenzie side is very, very top of funnel, brand awareness, trust, consistency, because you've got a captive audience of, X number of tens of thousands of financial advisors. We don't care about everybody else. And so what is it that's going to keep our products and our brand as a trusted, sustainable investment, well-run, well-managed and well return on your investment type of an organization in your mind as an advisor, as every day you're talking to dozens or hundreds of clients and making decisions about their future. I mean, you're impacting their kids going to university, their ability to buy a home, their ability to retire one day. And so the ability for us to manage that brand awareness is really critical. And so we do everything from sort of top of funnel digital consistency in market are always on search answering, and not just product type responses, but when certain lifestyle questions are coming up, how do we show up with valuable content and information and advice, not just trying to sell our products? We do a lot of live events. So we'll bring in advisors, we'll bring in experts, and we'll just have open dialogue and conversation around the markets. We provide podcasts and other type of content so that we're constantly educating and creating a level of trust and understanding that we're not just here, as I said, to sell. We're actually here to make sure you're making the right decision. And all of those things collectively are making sure that our brand is sort of top of funnel. And then annually, we do a market survey, and we actually try and measure the impact of all of those efforts against the consideration and awareness, and obviously the recall of our brand, unaided and aided, against the advisor community.
I love that. Yeah, I think especially in this space, right? It's very, like you said, it's a huge impact on people. It's not just like a jar of mayonnaise. It's everything kind of like encompassing.
Yeah, we don't sell widgets. That's what I like to say.
I love that. That's great. And you really find like setting that, you know, there's so much resource and time and effort kind of spent to kind of laying the groundwork, right? Of generally what McKinsey is or what IGM is about. Do you feel like all that effort spent, like if you are able to convert, like it's because of all that hard work that happened? Like how does that like tie
in? Yeah. So coming back to the initial point of sort of that end-to-end reporting, we're pretty good now at understanding the direct correlation between an investment of, let's say, live events. So if we're going to do a seminar or we're going to do a conference, we can look, you know, pre, during, and post 6, 9, 12 months, because these things have fairly long, you know, lag effects of the impact on the sales behavior and the purchase behavior of those advisors who engage with us, who open our emails, who register for the event, who show up at the event, who follow up and have a conversation with their wholesaler, our salespeople. And what does that do to the book value of the assets that they are recommending and then putting into the portfolios of their clients? So we're good at that on a channel by channel basis. What we're really trying now to do is look at the overall combination of effects of, you know, our MMM, which we do have. So we generally have an understanding of distribution of media and advertising spend, but in conjunction with meetings, sales calls, you know, it's really tough to get your wholesalers, you know, your sales team to document in their CRM system all of the notes of the conversation. But imagine a world where you just had the top two or three dispositioned topics of that call, plus all of the pre and post email and communications between, and any events or sort of ads that they saw. That's where we're trying to go to really understand the holistic impact. So channel by channel, pretty good. Integrated, that's where we're trying to figure out a little bit better attribution.
Interesting. Appreciate you sharing that. Kind of like hopefully kind of nudges me into the next part, which is something I really like personally passionate about, but I'd love to hear your take on it, because I think you're in a great position to do so, is innovation, right? Looking at how things are doing and iterating on it and trying to get better. And I think you identified a key area for your business right now, but for your role and your industry in general, like what does innovation look like, you know, what role do you play in driving that innovation into the business?
Innovation in our space is generally happening in a couple of areas. You know, one, from an operations of our business, you can think about, as an individual investor, you now have a lot of different choices around self-directed robo-advisors, self-directed trading platforms. Your banks are probably throwing all kinds of new products and offers at you. So, you know, one is, what is the actual role of a financial advisor in the ecosystem of someone managing their money? And is it an all or nothing, or is it fractional? And so you can sort of see there's a lot of product innovation and so on. But coming to more my job in particular, we're trying to figure out a few things. You know, one, how do we do more with less or more with same? So resource investment for things like content production, for things like analytics, measurement, monitoring, reporting, the more of the things we've talked about so far that we want to do, like actually understanding the value of every asset we put into market, means there's that much more to measure. There's that much more to monitor. So things like automating our content flows and using AI and technologies to manage things like taxonomy definition, the digital asset management workflow, making sure that agencies and internal resources all have access to the same asset. And then all of those assets are consistently tagged and measured equivalently across their use, so that 2 months, 2 years from now, we can go back and say, wow, there was some really good stuff that we put in market that helped grow the business. Why aren't we leveraging that again or making iterations on that? So one is really understanding the content and asset workflow. And then AI is really starting to be used. We're testing a lot of different capabilities, everything from, you know, raw template code-driven landing page design, so that our developers and our you know, we're on Adobe Experience Manager, so our AEM web producers aren't necessarily having to start from scratch every time. So how do we template the things that we know are going to work, all the way through to increasing our content production, so more volume and iterations, and really interesting things like testing workflow compliance management. So, you know, we all talk so much about, wow, we can just output so much more stuff with AI. But here's the problem. In a regulated industry where everything has to be checked and go through compliance, if you just create 10 times more stuff, you're creating a wicked backlog. Yeah. And so initially, imagine if you actually trained your AI models on, well, what would legal and compliance do? And if I can remove 80 to 90% of their job, now I've opened up the highway, I've removed the barriers, and now I can start pumping out more stuff, because I know that we only need to spot check and audit every once in a while because we're trusting the models to represent what compliance would do. So these are the kinds of things we're really starting to think about.
I love that. Well, that last piece gets me very excited.
It's not sexy, but like...
It's not.
But listen, I think that's where the opportunity is. Like, don't go where all the fish are, right? Just like... find your own lane. And I do think that this compliance legal automation could really be a game changer.
Definitely. I'm curious, as I'm like thinking about that, because, you know, some of the campaigns I work on, pharma, financial products, even auto, you know, I think everything just needs so many rounds of revisions, like everything needs that legal copy. But I guess, you know, how do we get legal to kind of buy into that? Like, how, you know, how can they assess?
Well, they need to be part of the model, right? Like, so if you think about the test and the pilot, I mean, we can't pretend to know their rules and thinking. And right. So it's kind of like the old capture model, right? We were all like, oh, this is great. This is protecting me. But what was a capture really doing? Training the models on what image is what from a human brain. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same thing. You've got to have them essentially training the models by saying, you know, yes, I'd let this go. No, I wouldn't let this go. Yes, I'd let this go. This needs a tweak. That word can't be used. Mm. And the more that goes through, the models will consistently learn and ultimately be able to, at least with a good amount of accuracy, say, I'll flag it. And maybe we're not going to automate the whole thing, but maybe we'll use it as an early warning system to essentially say, of the 100 assets, you only need to look at 12 because the others are like super clean.
Mm. I love that. Yeah, I mean, I can't even think of like the production efficiencies that can come out of that. And that's just generally what I'm excited for. But yeah, legal teams, I guess they need to be prepared more for a lot of captures coming out their way.
Well, and on a per hour basis, that might be our biggest savings in the company.
There you go. I love that. It sounds like you're kind of, you know, like the tools you're assessing, they're all in kind of like different places, right? What's your thought process of prioritizing, you know, hey, this actually needs automation, or like maybe this is great and I'm really interested in this, but like maybe not right now. Like, how do you kind of, it's kind of overwhelming, right? All these tools mm-hmm. are coming out right now. So like, what do you do to kind of prioritize for yourself?
Yeah. Well, so that last word, I think, is the key one, for yourself. So what we're not doing as an organization is every person for themselves. So what we're trying to do is we've actually stood up an AI and automation steering committee. And it includes, you know, representation from pretty much all of the major working groups, and it's led by IT. The initial ask was everybody come up with a macro list of use cases. So each department, whether it was marketing, sales, legal, compliance, IT, operations, back office, product, all essentially went away, did some homework, probably used AI to come up with their own lists, and then brought them back to the table. And, you know, we had debate and dialogue. We eventually had a corporate strategy lead sort of amalgamate it all and put it together in a macro list. We all aligned on each department taking their top two. And then we presented it to the board. So this wasn't just we believe, we're committed, and we're actually going to get executive sponsorship to allow us to truly start to try these things.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's, speaks to just the overall culture, right? I think there's, I was going to ask, you know, how do you get buy-in on certain things, or, you know, there's a certain level of education, right, that everyone kind of needs to be able to make an educated like assumption or you know, choice of like we're going to move forward with this or not. But a lot of that seems to kind of come from like their perception of AI and what it can be. It's a tool, right? First and foremost. So, you know, is that something that can be effective for them in their tool belt?
Yeah, the other thing we did decide to do, we approached it from a two-pronged strategy. One was we did actually set up with partners, large AI partners like your Microsofts and like your Googles, internal sandboxes that were closed off from the outside world so that we could test their large LLMs and actually see the output based on the kinds of questions we were using. So we had access to the latest trained versions. But anything we input wasn't necessarily going to go help train the mothership model in the public sphere. So our IT and InfoSec and security teams felt comfortable at least piloting. But at the same time, we also started to decide to use the built-in AI elements to some of the solution providers' assets and tools that we already have. So for instance, if you have Salesforce, if you have Adobe products, if you have smaller tech organizations, firms, any ad tech or martech, and AI was integrated, it's easier to just make sure that the MSA and the contracts you have with them already are, you know, free and clear from any liability, and just simply use what they're already offering you. Because, you know, doing things like email delivery to maximize open rates using Einstein built into Salesforce, why rebuild that? I'm never gonna, and our teams are never gonna, and you're never gonna out AI Salesforce. Like, call it what it is. So test it, see if it gets you enough of a point solution, and move on to one that you don't have in market, like that legal compliance workflow.
I love that. Yeah, I think it's easy to cut, I guess, you know, even myself, you know, like I see the hot new thing and I'm just like, wow, this is so cool. And it's probably just a demo of like the most, you know, the sexiest image to like regenerate or something like that. And it really captures my attention. But yeah, I think it's tying it back to, you know, what's important for the business, what makes sense. And I think it's also when I think of innovation too, in the context of AI, it's also building like a pipe, right? Like a process that allows other innovations to grow. And it's not just we can build this new thing and that's it. It has to kind of create some kind of like scalable process that allows like you said, almost like a sandbox of like, let's establish this area where we can, you know, test new ideas and we can kind of see where it goes from there, right? In terms of, I guess like the skill set, right? Like you've been a marketer for a number of years. You've been in this industry. I'm curious. Even maybe not even just someone that kind of coming up into the marketing space, but you know, people who are in the industry right now, like how do you see a shift in skill set as all these tools are growing, and you know, what does that look like, and how do you feel about that general kind of shift into whatever that is?
Yeah, a number of years. The gray hair is hidden by the lighting here. It's about brand and sort of top of funnel. I think brand marketing is still critical. Like, I think the notion of creative ideation and being able to put yourself into a persona of a client and really think through the behavioral economics of the things that are going to trigger them, that's really, really still important. That will never go away. But what I see happening is an augmentation and an additive set of skills that are required for even the most creative, which are much more analytical, data, insight-driven type of thought processes and skills. Not everybody needs to know how to code SQL, but everybody needs to think like they do. And by that, I mean, I can understand the connection between data points. I can understand the kinds of questions to ask of my analysts and insights teams to get the right kind of answers to make informed decisions on, as opposed to this is a really cool creative idea, throw it in market. Right? So going to the next level, this is a really cool creative idea, throw it into market, and I want to understand this. And can you help me? And if I need to change something or we need to think of different versions in order to get there, like let's iterate and work on that together between the pure sort of data geek attitude and the pure like creative geek attitude. And how do you put those two together? So I do see that. I also see a skill set required much more in the realm of, I'll use the word automation, but running the ship of marketing technology and ad technology. So hands-on keyboard, in console, you know, buying media, optimizing campaigns, tweaking landing pages, identifying anomalies, all of the things that are much more, you know, real time. Yes, a lot of that can be automated, But the automation to me is going to be, whoa, red flag, something might be wrong here. Here's what we think it is, but the human brain needs to go in and make the decision. And so people that know how to, you know, design journeys, build journeys, implement journeys, think through different kinds of triggers and behaviors and really understand the life cycle of a prospect or a client. Mm-hmm. That's the other set of skills. It really, that whole element of MarTech, ad tech, optimization and operations.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as someone definitely more leaning towards that creative side, there's always this huge push, right, of like understanding historical data, making data informed decisions. You know, so much of like a lot of what we're taught is really just like, you know, comes down from like the insight and kind of building this like creative that allows to breathe and capture attention and also speak to a specific audience. But you know, with how much digital budget is going towards advertising and understanding all these things you can kind of pull in, right? All these insights that are quantifiable. There's a huge missed opportunity of not doing that. So definitely echo what you're saying as well. I have one final question for you. And I know we kind of talked about some of the cooler things that you think AI can be doing, but do you think there's any untapped AI potential that lies within the marketing cycle that we haven't talked about yet? Like where are other people like maybe not thinking about as much as they should be?
Big question.
Yeah.
So I think that one day we will get to this intersection of the term I used before, like, you know, the behavioral economics, like what, or maybe the better word is like psychographics, right? If I really understand what makes you, you know, not the person in the next room, but you tick and respond. And I can do that for thousands to millions of individuals based on their profile, based on their behavior, based on their interests. So if you think about AI really getting smart on helping to understand an individual's response mechanism. And at the same time, AI is getting really, really good. In fact, it already is at creative output and high volume of creative differentiation and making like 50 versions of the same kind of thing. What happens when you stitch those together, right? What happens when you don't just kind of say, here's a prompt for this kind of person, I want you to create 3 or 4 versions of a certain type of message or ad or creative or subject line or email tagline or whatever. And you say, for this list of 1 million, I want each person, when I see them the next time through any channel, to have the potential to see one of n number of creative assets. So you've got this like incredibly large mashup. So in that world, could one argue that every single personalized ad is sort of a deep fake because it never really existed other than for that person with the message that you want them to get in a world that you're trying to like tweak them into taking action?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's pretty interesting. Like, imagine in the political sphere, if you knew everybody's hot button issue or predicted it with a really good degree of accuracy and had the ability for the machine, when they saw them, to quickly stitch together something that you knew would resonate to make them decide to choose you as the candidate. That's pretty scary. It's interesting, but it's scary. So I think this notion of where AI could go is this mashup of psychographic behavioral kind of trigger point data with the ability to mass produce. And I just don't know at that point where the creative team exists anymore, because in theory, everything becomes almost a deep fake ad for individuals.
Yeah. Wow. I'm both fascinated and frightened.
Yeah, and it was a conversation I just had with a few agency leads. And, you know, we debated, is it the word deepfake? And I said, that's just more provocative. It gets people thinking. But you kind of know where I'm going. At that point, is the machine even, does it need to even tell you what it's going to put out there? And how do you restrict it from doing that? That's where it gets, to your point, it's interesting and scary. So I do think, you know, the area of AI that needs to be thought through is the safeguarding, right? What do we do around containment and actually understanding and visualizing and seeing what goes into market and preventing the rogue content from finding its way out?
Definitely. Yeah. Amazing. I absolutely loved, I love that answer, because I think it kind of opens up, you know, we can see kind of the potential. I think what you're saying is hopefully much, much further down the line, but it could be much closer. But it's also, you know, we have to think about these things, and especially what you capped off with, the safeguarding. That's someone has to rein it in, right? And mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing that's going to kind of keep us all safe. So cool. Awesome, Corey. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I've learned a ton, and thanks for joining us.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much, and have a great day and week.
Likewise. And for all our listeners, please tune into the next episode of The A Word, brought to you by AdSapiens.